This is Cast of Wonders, the young adult fiction podcast featuring stories of the fantastic. Episode 290, welcome. I'm Susie Rodriguez, homeschooling mother, aspiring writer, and programming director for BayCon. Every year in January, Cast of Wonders highlights some of our favorite episodes from the previous year. It's a great chance for us to take a bit of a breather and let you, our listeners, catch up on any missed back episodes with new commentary from a different member of the crew. My staff pick from 2017 is A Wish and a Hope and a Dream by M. Darusha Wame, which originally aired as episode 265 on September 10th, 2017. Darusha writes science fiction and speculative poetry as M. Darusha Wame, and mainstream poetry and fiction as Darusha Wame. Science fiction books include Beautiful Red, Children of Arcadia, and the Anderson Dexter Cyberpunk Detective Series. Mainstream books include the Devi Jones Locker Young Adult Series and The Home for Wayward Parrots, forthcoming from New West Press. Darusha's short fiction and poetry have appeared in many venues, including Arsenica, Nature, Escape Pod, and several anthologies. Darusha is originally from Canada, but currently lives in Wellington, New Zealand, after spending the past several years sailing the Pacific. For more information, visit darusha.ca. This story was narrated by Setsu Uzume. Setsu Uzume spent their formative years in and out of dojos. They also trained in a monastery in rural China, studying Taoism and swordplay. Setsu is a member of Codex and of SFWA, as well as the assistant editor at Podcastle. And while they have dabbled in many arts, only writing and martial arts seem to have stuck. And now, we've a tale to tell.
A Wish and a Hope and a Dream by M. Darusha Wame. You have always been a princess. When you are 6 years old, your hat is a cardboard cone covered in glitter glue with a cellophane veil. Your dress began life as a pillowcase in the free box at the Goodwill. Your best friend Inez has a store-bought costume, her gown soft and sky blue like Princess Karima's. You aren't envious, though. You love your pillowcase dress and hat that makes you almost as tall as your mother. Inez twirls around and around until she nearly falls over, clutching you to stay upright. Oh, I'll never get used to riding a magic carpet. You giggle and say, that's why I ride in a carriage pulled by 8 golden ponies. Can I come to the ball with you then? Inez sinks to the ground, her skirt billowing around her like a cloud. Aren't they adorable? Inez's father says, his eyes crinkling. Yeah, your mother says, off in their own little world. Come on, Mr. Solano says. That's one of the great things about being a kid, all that imagination, all those dreams. He looks at you, then his eyes dart back to your mother. They can be anything they want at this age. Might as well let them enjoy it. You're right, your mother says, handing him an old ice cream bucket. Thanks for taking them. I can really use the rest. It's no trouble, he says, then kneels down to where you and Inez are sitting, playing with the material of her dress. Come on, my two little princesses, let's go get some candy. You get up and your mother adjusts the sash on your dress. Only 2 pieces on the way home, she says. You want it to last until Christmas, okay? You nod, excited about the prospect of even 2 pieces of candy. It's been forever since you've had candy. Your family has been eating spaghetti with ketchup for days. You love spaghetti and ketchup, not realizing that it's just what's left at the end of the food bank hamper. You also don't know that your mother lost her job, which is why she is there when you get home from school and has had time to make your costume. You know your father is working double shifts, though. That's why he isn't there to see you in your pretty dress. Your mom goes to take a photo as you and Inez stand together, grinning at each other while she fumbles with her old phone. Come on, Inez says, grabbing your hand. We need to hurry if we're going to get to the ball on time. When you are 9, both your parents are working. You get the official princess app for your birthday, and each day after school, you and Inez lie on the Lady Dawn pink comforter she's had on her bed since you were little, looking at the latest photo shoots and reading about the princesses. Did you see that Cheyenne just got back from a trip to New Zealand? You say, paging through the latest updates. They wouldn't let her bring Wolf into the country with her. Isn't that awful? It's not as if he's some ordinary dog. He's, like, partially part of her. It's like last year, Inez says, when that one country wouldn't let Princess Karima travel on her flying carpet within their border. I know, how dumb. What's airspace security anyway? You say, rolling your eyes. You both go back to the pictures. I can't decide if Karima or Cheyenne is my favorite, Inez says a few minutes later. Rona, you say, your fingers tracing the flowing curls of her beautiful red hair. Rona? But she doesn't even look like you. She's so pale. You don't look like any of them with your skinny legs and bitten fingernails. You shrug. She's beautiful. They're all beautiful, Inez says, her forehead wrinkling. When I'm 10, Mom says I can get my hair cut like Karima's. She holds up the ends of her long black hair, affecting a makeshift bob. She said no to the eyeliner, though. Inez lets her hair fall back down. How about you? You don't know what to do with makeup. Your mother wears little, but one afternoon when both your parents were at work, you spent an hour in the bathroom with her eyeshadow, blush, and lipstick. The best you could do was make yourself look like a clown. You can tell that Inez would never look like a clown, but she's pretty to begin with, everyone says so. You are clever, or strong, never pretty. My hair's okay the way it is, you say, running your fingers through the short cut. I'd look dumb with long hair. Inez shrugs, and the two of you look at pictures of her with the different haircuts until it's time for you to go home. At night, when you can't sleep, you imagine you are Rona, with a gown of green velvet, a mind sharp enough to trick a wizard, a face pretty enough to bewitch an entire kingdom, and a long trail of flaming red hair. When you are 12, Inez gets weird. All she wants to talk about is romance. You think it's because of Princess Mei Ling's wedding last month. Don't you think Cheyenne's prince is better looking than Mei Ling's prince? Inez asks. You don't know what to say. You don't care about the princes. I mean, I know he's older, she says, not waiting for you to answer. But I think he looks distinguished. That silver hair at his temples makes him look, I don't know, classy, like one of those actors in a black and white movie. She flicks through the images on her phone. She bought the princess app with her first babysitting money, and now you sit apart in her room, each looking at your own pictures on your own phones. Do you ever dream about your wedding? I think about it all the time. Mei Ling's was so beautiful, Inez says, not seeming to notice that you haven't said a word. I want gold leaf on my wedding cake, and a dress like hers, but with blue accents, not pink. And what did you think about her prince's uniform? Guys look great in uniforms. She stops talking and looks over at you. Want to watch the video again on the big screen? The Solanos have a big TV in their living room, and you often go over to watch movies. You nod, even though you think the wedding was kind of boring. But all the princesses were there, and Rona looked incredible in her formal gown. You watch it all again for the millionth time, impatiently sitting through the wedding part to get to the ball. When Mei Ling enters the main salon on a flying horse, you gasp with delight as if you'd never seen it before. When Rona dances with her prince, time stops. That night, you dream that instead of Rona's prince, it is you she dances with, your arm around her waist, her head on your shoulder. You twirl around the ballroom, your feet not quite touching the floor, her hair flying behind you both in a trail of auburn curls. When you are 17, you work part-time in a bakery. Your alarm goes off at 5:30 in the morning, Rona's voice singing her theme song sweetly in your ear. It almost makes waking in the dark bearable. You spend 2 hours each morning decorating the elaborate fairy cakes that each cost more than you'll be paid that week. Then you go to school and try to stay awake in class. Inez texts you in history. New Pim movie opens tomorrow. Let's go. You've been saving all your bakery money and summer job wages in a college fund. You know now that your parents can barely keep up with their debts and won't be able to help, and you won't have the grades for a scholarship. Your father has steady work in construction, but it was never enough when your mother couldn't find work. Your mother went to college, and she's always told you that an education is the most important thing. Wishing for something won't make it so, she says. You have to put yourself out to get anywhere in this world. She says that it was her degree which got her the job she has now, assistant to a junior manager at a big firm downtown. Who would you hire? She asks you. Someone just out of high school or someone who's been to college? You can't just expect to get a good job without it anymore. Sometimes you feel like you want to scream whenever you hear the word college. But you know your mother is right. Your parents seem to work all the time. You can't remember the last time the three of you did something together that wasn't a hasty meal or a half hour in front of the second-hand, tiny TV. Between school and the bakery, it feels like you work all the time, too. You text Inez back. Kay. You get to the theater 2 hours early and still barely get in. The audience is mostly teens and college-age women, a few boyfriends, and just a smattering of guys there of their own accord. But there are hardly any little kids. This isn't one of those origin story films. It's a grown-up story about a post-princess life featuring Bianca, the first of the princesses, a stately matron now, and Leanne, who became a princess when you were a kid. The story begins as Leanne arrives at Bianca's castle in her carriage, glorious and shining with her footmen bustling about. She enters the great hall to find a table groaning under a feast of delights. Inez elbows you and whispers, "Those are the fairy cakes you make." It's true. The bakery where you work specializes in replica royal sweets. Being around such beautiful things is the main appeal of the job. You nod and shush her. Over the next 90 minutes, you are transported to a magic world that you can barely believe exists in the same universe as your own life. Gorgeous silken gowns transformed from ordinary box store dresses, flying chariots whisking the princesses to fabulous balls, or feasts laden with luscious food no one eats. Lives of glamour and leisure. For a moment, you wonder if it is even real. Then comes the moment you've all been waiting for. Everyone has been talking about the rumor that a new princess would be revealed in the film. Your breath catches in your throat when you see her for the first time. You know it's her. She is too radiant, too perfect to be working in some grimy urban store. Bianca and Leanne have gotten lost on their way back to Leanne's chateau and walk into a small Korean grocery in some nameless city looking for directions. The girl behind the counter must be about your age. But her days of worrying about grades and college are over. The princesses recognize her true nature immediately and take her away with them. No one objects. It is as if it were ordained in the stars. They say that the movie story is based on her real life, that she really was discovered in some store like that last year. So-yeon, an urban princess, elevated from the streets to a castle in the clouds. Your eyes fill with tears. You can't count the number of times you've wished for that moment. To have what you've known all your life finally be reflected in someone else's eyes, that you, too, are more than you appear to be. If So-yeon could be plucked like a flower from her life of toil, surely it could happen to anyone. Even to you? When you are 22, you pull a crumpled bill from your pocket. It's enough for a draft beer at the campus bar, and you've earned one. You are $30,000 in debt. You can't remember the last time you slept more than 5 hours in a night, but tomorrow you will walk on stage with hundreds of other people and walk off with a degree. The bartender slides the beer towards you and takes your money, her dark eyes lingering on you for a moment. You're not in the mood to talk, so you take your beer to a quiet table near the back. You sip and look around. There aren't as many people in the place as there would be on a Friday night, but at 3 in the afternoon on the day before graduation, it's crowded enough. You recognize the students' uniform of thrift store coats, broken book bags, and 5-year-old phones. You notice a guy from your post-structural economics class a couple of tables over. He gives you the eye contact and nod, then goes back to his animated conversation. He's wearing a pale yellow t-shirt with a faded image of Princess Bonita printed on it. You know he's wearing it ironically, but you had that exact shirt when you were a kid. You remember working with what's-his-name, Charlie, Carl, something like that, on a class project. You made this infographic that showed how many people out of 100 ever got out of the economic class where they were born. It was a good chart. You got an A-. Your phone buzzes and you flip it over. Inez. You haven't seen her since Christmas when you were both home and her engagement news overshadowed the holiday. She found her prince. Going home after grad, let's get together. She texts. I'll be back this weekend. Coffee? You text. Yeah, wanna ask you about cakes. She texts. You wonder how she and Mikhail can afford a fairy cake for their wedding. They are both going to be paying off their student loans as long as you are, and neither has a job lined up after graduation. Your mother told you that they think they will have to live with Inez's parents after they get married. It's no coincidence, Carl or Charlie's slurred voice interrupts your thoughts from across the bar. We're living in a new feudalism ruled by unrealistic hopes to join an unattainable elite. Statistically, the rags-to-riches dream isn't real, but we think if we just work hard enough, it'll happen for us. We all think we're kings in peasants' clothes, but we're just children playing make-believe. It's time we decided to live in the real world. Other voices rise to join his in belligerent agreement, and you recognize arguments you've heard yourself make on other afternoons like this one. Maybe Inez has it right. Buy an expensive cake. Have a fairy tale wedding day. What's another few thousand dollars? At least then you'd have something to remember, one moment when you were someone's princess. But it's so hard to let the dream go. You don't feel like a peasant, you never have. But you know if you keep pretending that one day you'll meet your fairy godmother, she'll wave her wand and suddenly everything will all be fine. That you'll spend your life being a servant to a fantasy. You finish your beer, thinking of those days when all it took for a magical transformation was a rolled-up piece of cardboard and a pillowcase dress. You flick your finger over your phone, Rona's beautiful face filling the screen. Those blue eyes. That red hair. Can't you live in your imagination with her just a little longer? After all, you've always been a princess, haven't you?
I think the reason I fell in love with this story the first time I read it is that it captures so perfectly growing up working class and the idea that we know on some level that we're being offered bread and circuses, but when you're little, you want them anyway. You know that you're never going to be a princess, and it's still worth it to spend all of your emotional capital and all of your wishes and hopes and dreams on an idea that's so perfectly beautiful that it's worth loving even if you know it's never going to be yours. I think Jerusha did an amazing job of picking out a piece of every little girl's childhood and holding it up for us, and not mocking it, looking at it realistically, but also looking at it with love. Join us next week when Dani Daly presents her favorite. Cast of Wonders relies on your donations to pay our staff and authors and to bring you the best in young adult audio fiction week after week. If you've enjoyed this story, please consider making a donation using the PayPal buttons on our site. Every one-time, or better yet, recurring monthly subscription helps. Now you can even become a patron on our brand new Patreon. Any help provided earns you our heartfelt thanks. You can share your appreciation for this story by leaving us a review on iTunes, sharing the episode with your family and friends, or discussing it on the EA forum, forum.escapeartists.net. We're at Cast of Wonders on Twitter. Come say hello. Cast of Wonders is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is brought to you by the creative team of editor and host Marguerite Kenner, assistant editors Dani Daly and Catherine Inskip, associate editors Alexis Goebel, Alicia Caparoso, Amy Brennan, Andrew Ho, Chris Tang, Emma Smales, Carissa Sluice, Ray O, Sean Proctor, Tanya Bispalko, Trace Fontil, Will Haight Minor, and myself. Our audio producer is Jeremy Carter. Our episodes are released under the Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives, 4.0 International License. You can share the episode, but you can't change it or sell it. Theme music is Appeal to Heavens by Alexei Nov, available from Promo DJ or his Facebook page.